Hey everybody, welcome to Forge Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host. We are the Bella Lost Souls podcast. I'm joined tonight by Ricky Addington and Justin Troop.
Hello world.
Hola.
Chris Morgan may be coming in later, and then also in this show you'll get a spot between me and Dave Taylor talking about the Nova Open Charitable Foundation and the sweet things you can get from that raffle during this episode. I will put that in after we'll take a break. We'll talk, Ricky Troop and I will talk, and then there'll be a break, and we'll put in the spot with Dave Taylor, and then we'll come back, and Morgan will more than likely join at some point during that. But we are on the actual eve of the ATC, so if you are hearing this, I'm actually probably on the way with Ricky to the ATC this weekend, so if you are listening to this on the way and you see us there, please come say hi.
And potentially buy a booze, because that's a thing now.
Is it really?
You can. They have the venue now is allowing alcohol to be brought in. It won't be for sale, but you can have it.
Oh my gosh, this is a game changer. Do not let me have alcohol, Paul.
No, I know. I know the limits of our team.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny. We got Justin Pizzavarazza on our team this year, and he's on my Adepticon team, and we've done very well the last couple of years there. And he says you can't drink during the games. He makes me not. But maybe we'll sneak some in. We'll see.
It's really hard. I mean, that year when we played against the those cool dudes that do the Adepticus Mechanicus theme at Adepticon, Jesus, Mary, I don't even know what I was doing.
The Tiki Gods? Was that it?
That's it. That was them. Yeah.
Dude, those guys are so awesome.
Those guys went out and got us donuts, gave us commemorative cups, and told us if we bring them back next year, we get free booze in them.
I really do like those guys, and they've got one of my longtime 40K friends, Peter DeFloro, on there. And I don't like to single anyone out, but this guy got second place at the first grand tournament I ever won in Baltimore 100 years ago.
I don't care. Single those guys out. Those guys are great.
I mean, it's so cool to encounter people at tournaments for that long. That's part of what we talk about is that you see the same people at different tournaments all over the country year after year, and it's a community that you just appreciate being in, and those guys are a part of it. And and leading up the team environment for the ATC, I really do enjoy the team tournaments, because you're there with a bunch of buds, and then especially our club has multiple teams. So we're going to have lots of people there, being able to, just check in on 10, 15 different 20 people. Plus, this is just in our club and the people that we know that are affiliated with the club. And then all the other people you can just go and hang out with and stuff. It's absolutely awesome. We are on the eve of the ATC. When this show gets released, we will be on the way there. And then, Ricky and I will be on the team together with some other guys.
It's going to be awesome. We're going to have one teammate with a sunburnt left arm. Hopefully he gets better tint on his windows on that 8-hour drive across the state.
We're staying at the Best Western, so,
There's nothing best about that Best Western.
It's actually not bad. The people there that run it are very nice. And we're going to probably try to have some kind of social activity going down there at the old, I don't want to call it BW.
No, you can't. No, it's too close to B-dubs.
Yeah. Which we will also.
Can we talk about this, Paul? Why are you not sponsored by Buffalo Wild Wings? Because anytime we go to or talk about a tournament, your third question into this event is, where's B-dubs?
Where's the Buffalo Wild Wings? We'll see about that. We actually are looking for, we should entertain sponsors for the hobby segment. Yeah, so we are actually, there are outside of our normal Dice Head and Bowls, being sponsors and great allies of the show, we actually do have some openings for. We have sponsorship inventory available right now.
Oh my gosh! And this painting segment brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings and their delicious dessert nachos. I'll do that if I get free dessert nachos out of that. I will do that every episode.
I'll see what I can do. Oh, I've been painting. You know, this is always a mad dash for painting and getting things ready for the tournament. Like, I have a Crimson Hunter Exarch in my list. I don't actually own a Crimson Hunter Exarch. I was supposed to borrow one, but then the guy got delayed. He was going to paint it and bring it to the event, but then he got delayed, and so I had to paint one myself. So I painted a bare-bones Crimson Hunter Exarch, which I will... You can find the bare bones version on Twitter, but I'm going to bring it up to my normal hobby standard after the tournament. Ricky, I think that you are modifying a couple of Hellhounds tonight.
I don't want to brag about this, but I just broke two guns off of my 8-year-old son's Hellhounds so that I could put bolters on them. But it's done. He didn't cuss me out or anything. So I'm literally borrowing. I have no models that are mine for this tournament. I'm borrowing two tanks from my son, like other tanks from a friend of mine on the way. I'm picking those up, and then you're bringing my infantry up to me. So this is 2 years in a row that I've played with nothing that I own, and it is wonderful.
We're actually on this episode, we're going to talk about some kind of combos with knights. And so we may second guess like our whole theory about what you should play after we get
about this. As soon as we submitted the lists, I was already like second guessing everything we did. So I've just accepted that as part of ATC.
Well, you know, thank you very much for being on the team. And that's part of what it is with ATC, is that people make compromises, and those that are willing to make the most compromises about what they take and what they're used to taking typically do the best. And I have high hopes for us this year. You know, I can't talk enough about Shane Grubb and Chris Pryor that run the event and the people that help them out, just how wonderful it is, just how it's just a really chill and cool environment, but still ultimately competitive. Can't talk enough good about them, and can't wait to hang out with them and play some games. But enough about that. As it were. I mean, we're definitely going to talk about tournament recap after the fact. I apologize for missing last week. We actually recorded a show. We have to file this into lost episodes. I actually have a lot going on right now, and I wasn't able to get it cleaned up and released. And so I may try to stick some segments in this show or other shows, the ones that are somewhat evergreen. But I apologize for not releasing it. And so we just have this week coming out right now.
I'm ashamed. That was a really good recording.
It is. It was good. I'm going to bring it in. We actually had Pete Sforza on that one. So we'll have to get him back. We actually talked about how we're going to start doing, we're going to start filming battle reports and putting them on YouTube, and at least a couple times a month, maybe 4 times a month. And, you know, now that I've re-put it out there for people to hear, we have to do it.
Yeah, now there's pressure. Thanks, dude. Seriously.
Thought you dodged a bullet.
We're in deep. I mean, we got some equipment. Hopefully people are patient with us as we work through getting decent at it.
I'm just going to be the boom mic operator, and I'm just going to, like, you know, keep dropping it down into the frame. Just like some terrible B-movie.
Look, anything is better than the duct tape Logitech cam that was hanging from your ceiling a few years ago.
Oh, that's still there. Yeah. It's not duct taped. It is, what is it? Masking taped to the ceiling. Yeah,
my bad. It's even better.
Yeah, it's still there.
I'm actually impressed that's holding up. That's great.
Yeah, it hasn't. I even, when I was messing around with a piece of software called OBS or OBS or whatever, it's like it still works.
That's great.
It's just hanging there.
You heard it here, folks. Scotch brand masking tape is
It's eternal.
Brought to you by Finishing Moves.
Brought to you by Scotch brand tape.
There is going to be a hobby segment on here too. The new White Dwarf that just came out with the Stormcast Eternal on the front. There's actually some really cool painting tutorials in there. That's one of the coolest things about the White Dwarf, is that it's, if you don't already subscribe, you probably should. It's a thick magazine, has tons of content. It's cool to get delivered to your house or pick it up at the hobby store. But there are many, many painting tutorials in every one. And one of them, that came out in this episode or this issue really, it reminded me of something that I considered a long time ago, and that's how to make your kind of your real bright things pop and stay poppy, and stay bright. And that's one of the things that I failed at for many attempts trying to make something bright. I would always find a way to like screw it up. But there's a tip in this White Dwarf that made me think of something to talk about, and I want to talk about it as we later on in the episode. So let me grab Morgan. Chris Morgan is now with us.
Yo,
that's and like sorcery.
We're about to jump into talking about knights, blood angels, and guard, with generating tons of command points, being able to fuel the cool things in the knights.
I love so many of those things, but one in particular.
Well, okay, so Ricky, you are our knight professional.
I don't want to say professional, but I will use the term aficionado.
Well, so the FAQ that came out for knights not that long ago gave them
all
additional...
All praise be to the FAQ. Sorry.
Well, it gave them...
I have to interrupt.
It gave them additional command points.
Oh,
praise
gosh, yeah.
Be.
Yeah.
So tell me how that works. I mean, I know that the Helverin and the Armigers and the Warglaives don't contribute to the command point bonus, but tell me how it works for knights in general now.
Right, so now if you take the super heavy detachment with three knights, you're going to get at a minimum three command points. Basically the way it works, if you have any knights in there and one of them is a Questorus knight, you're going to get three command points. So if I have a Questorus and two Armiger knights, that'll give me three command points. If I have
and you're Battleforged, right? You count as being Battleforged.
Right.
So that's technically six if you just take that.
Right. I'm not counting that. Just for the detachment itself. And then if you take three Questorus knights or a Dominus, basically Questorus, Dominus, or Cerastus chassis knights, cause Forgeworld FAQ'd theirs as well. So now if you take basically the big knights, if you take three big boys, you're going to get six command points out of that, if I remember that correctly.
So then you'd be looking at nine.
Yeah. So
which is way better than the four than they were getting before.
So much better. Because my list, when the Codex came out, the day the Codex came out, I did a local tournament, and I think I had, five command points or something? I think six. And then the last time, just the other day when I played, I had 12 command points, because I run a detachment with two Questorus, one Cerastus, and then I run another detachment with a Questorus and two Armigers.
I mean, that's it. So it's essentially double the command points that they were getting before. Yeah.
It's fantastic. It's you actually get to use your stratagems. Before, you did not get to... you kind of could pull off one thing. You could pull off one trick, and that was pretty much it. And now, in a pure knight detachment, you know, running nothing but Imperial Knights, you can have up to 12 command points.
We're not going to talk about that.
No, of course, anybody and their mother can sit down and build a knight list. It's not hard. I do it. So
knights are cool model. That's the thing that had them. That they threw the tournament scene for a loop when they first came out, because the knights had, like, when I'm talking about when they first came out with, like, six hull points and were basically, you know, they were imbalancing. They didn't fit well into missions, but the models were just so freaking cool that there was no way that people weren't going to insist on bringing them. And so TOs had to figure out what to do.
Yeah. I mean, I immediately purchased five of them and started taking them to tournaments. And I just considered 3-2 a good showing. At a three round tournament, go 2-1, I'm happy. At a five rounder, 3-2, you were happy. As a knight player, going 3-2 was great success. And if you won a local tournament, you were amazing.
Walking on top of the world.
Man. Oh yeah. I won a local tournament one time and I with knights, and I thought I was just the greatest thing to ever, happen to 40K. Now obviously with their ability to be wounded by anything, it's a much different game. They play a lot differently than they used to. With the Codex now and the stratagems, I think that's where we're going, right?
Because the stratagems are actually pretty darn good, and the command points is where it was the biggest drawback to being able to. So, okay, cool. We have four pages of stratagems. I'm hyperbolizing. I think there are three pages of stratagems.
For knights, there are four. Yeah.
Oh, there. Okay, there you go. So yeah. I knew it was a bunch. But there's a bunch of stratagems, but you were never going to get to use them all.
No.
Now with the command point buff innately on knights, and then when you throw in the tricks, from the Imperial Guard with the Cur Alvis Aquila. And then, Chris, what's the Blood Angel relic?
The Veritas.
Right. Yeah, that allows you to basically roll twice to get a refund on your command points. So every time command points are spent, you're getting the ability to roll a couple of times to get command points back. You're now, I mean, you could potentially go infinite. I mean, it won't happen often, but you have the ability to maximize the use of stratagems. And so things in the Knight Codex that like, where you get to always strike, no matter what your wound profile is, you can strike as if you're unwounded. And then, Ricky, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't there one that lets you, like, save yourself and strike even if you died?
Let's see here. So, Valiant Last Stand, it's 2 command points, and basically, if you don't, when you die and don't explode, you get to fight, as if you had 1 wound remaining. You get to make a full attack.
So, you could then load up on the other strategy. You can be like, I'm going to pop this, and I'm going to pop it and fight as if I was completely fresh.
Yep. If you are a Questor Mechanicus aligned house, you could do that. That would be Machine Spirit Resurgent and Valiant Last Stand. So Mechanicus can do that for 3 command points, which is hard sell for a pure knight army. But when you got
we're talking about that 600 point tax to get about 1,000 command points.
Yeah, you're going to do this with every single knight that you have. So it's really good.
Now, I mean, clearly, like, the way to kind of defeat this is to attack the characters, to stop their engines. By the way, anytime that you see someone having an engine, and that's what I refer to as things that that they're able to generate power or momentum or whatever on their army list, that's the engine. If you can take out the engine, destabilize it, remove the engine, then you're always in a better position than you were before. Because these relics go on characters, in this army are going to be a lot more fragile than the knights themselves, in my opinion. So you probably want to take out the engine as soon as possible if you're ever facing this. But if they are crafty or prevent you from doing it, then they are going to be able to have this kind of command point generation thing that lets them use all their tricks.
And not just use them, but keep on using them.
Things like chain sweep. You know, like chain sweep, that's a hard sell when you only have 12 command points. So being able to keep command points coming towards you each turn, chain sweep all of a sudden becomes a pretty solid way to use a command point.
What does chain sweep do? Why do you say that?
Well, because it's... that's the stratagem that after you fight with a knight model that has a chain sword, you roll a d6 for each enemy model within 3 inches of that model, and then on a 6, that model's unit suffers a mortal wound. So, you know, it's kind of risky because you have to roll 6s. So, you know, do you want to
You're not
going to
burn the command
that?
Points. You
exactly.
say you're not going
to. Yeah, I'm not going to burn those command points when rotating my ion shields or something like that is more, you know.
That's actually one of the more powerful things, the rotating ion shields, because that you have to burn command points to do that. I think it's 1 command point, right?
Unless you're a Dominus, and then Dominus have to pay 3 for it.
Okay, but it gives you a +1 to your invulnerable save, or makes it's +1, right?
Correct. It increases your invulnerable save by 1.
So that's something that you would do every turn now, as to where you would be kind of a real hesitant to maybe to do that as often when you only got 3 command points.
Yeah. You really had to decide if it was worth it.
But with 2 chances to get that roll, to get the command point back, you're going to be burning it every single time.
Yeah, absolutely. Even with 12 command points, in a pure knight list, I'm rotating ion shields almost every turn. It's just guaranteed. You're just going to do it. As soon as your opponent's shooting phase starts, you're going to pick one that you need to stay alive, and you're going to pop it. And it's no question now whether you should risk it or not.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. Is that that's kind of what we're trying to make. The point we're trying to make, I think, is that before we were kind of. I don't say we were down on knights, but we weren't as enthusiastic about knights because none of these toys that we're talking about, none of the tricks were going to get used with any regularity, and so you weren't going to get, you know, a ton of effectiveness out of them. Now that has completely changed, and you're going to see them.
And I think that we kind of subconsciously, too, when we're first picking up that codex, almost, I don't know if it's an obligation or whatever it may be, but we always tend to look at it from the perspective of, can I do this with just this book first? Because we kind of take for granted that you can always throw in these command point batteries and all of these other things.
Well, most of us are mono faction players, by the way. I mean, like, that's what we prefer to be. Like, yeah. I know, I mean, we give Chris a hard time a lot, but but most of us here
on a lot of different reasons. But that said, though, like, our initial feeling on the Night Codex was just like, well, this would be great, but we'll never get to use it. Now with Ricky's magical Fun Times FAQ of Bliss, we have a new perspective on, oh, now, in addition to being able to mix all these things up, now you can actually do a little bit more of having that Night presence on the table, and you're not penalized in the command point department for it as much. And now we're actually talking about where we weren't, you know, 3-4 weeks ago, using some of these stratagems that were there.
Oh, it was like a unicorn. Like, that's, hey, cool story, buddy. That's never happening during a game. I mean, like, I could almost feel myself having that conversation in a game store. Now that's not so much the truth anymore, with this bump that they got a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, I actually did a little research for this show, and the horror stories that people were posting in comments and groups and stuff about how these knights had just absolutely wrecked them because their opponent was refunding all his command points and spending 10 a turn or whatever. I mean, it was like that perfect storm. The guy must have been rolling super hot, but he was burning all these command points to always attack again and to always rotate the ion shield and always be at full strength.
It makes them strong. And I say that, like, I put my just regular knight list out against my buddy's ATC Eldar list, and I actually pulled out a win with just that. And I was really at the end of it. I was starved for command points. So, you know, taking out, you know, maybe some armigers here and there, or taking out one knight to add in all of these extra troops that are going to sit on objectives that are going to give me command points and all this, it's going to bring a lot more tricks and tools to a knight army.
I had a buddy tell me, I mean, this is a buddy that I respect his playstyle. Like, I adopt some principles of his play into my own game. He told me that he didn't like the way the armigers, the Helverin, were performing.
I refuse to ever be friends with your buddy. I don't know who he is.
I'm giving him his anonymity. I haven't played with them, so, you know, I can't say one way or the other, but
I love them.
That was my point. I'm like, how could they not be good? I said, how could they not be good? It's all those autocannon shots. He didn't reply.
Yeah, Helverins. I run two Helverins in the backfield. That's my army is very aggressive because, you know, knights, I'm going to want to get in there and dance on people. But I have two Helverins that typically stay midfield or backfield on objectives. They have huge range. They're strength 7. Okay, they're only AP minus 1, but it is a blanket 3 damage.
Damage 3. That's what makes our Dark Reapers so good, by the way. I mean, granted, yes, they hit on threes, and that's awesome. They can shoot 1,000 times. Yes, that's great. But the fact that it's, like, solid damage.
Yeah. Necron Destroyers, my buddy, I was playing a guy at a tournament, and he had all his Necron Destroyers out there. Turn 1, my Armigers, my Helverins killed all but one, and he got the luckiest rolls ever. Every single one of them came back. And then turn 2, I killed all of them again with my Helverins. So they are so good. And then Sky Reaper Protocols is really good. And if you have all
what does that do? Command
points, Sky Reaper Protocols is the one that lets Helverins, they can reroll failed hit rolls against a unit that can fly. So
which is a lot of units, by the way. That's one of the ones we did talk about before. Like, a lot of things have fly, just kind of instant. Like, you might forget that they have fly, but, like, Wave Serpents have fly.
Yeah, and that's where I was using it, was against Eldar. Like, everything that the guy had on his on the table, you know, against Drakari, everything they have flies. You know, half their infantry fly, you know. So it's Sky Reaper Protocols is great. You know, it's one command point to get all those rerolls, which is really useful against Eldar Jets, who, you know, everybody's going to be same Han, right?
God, so if you've got that Blood Angels and the Guard detachment in there to have those relics that, I mean, one command point, you burn it every single time.
Yeah, you don't have to debate, do I do it? No, of course you do it. You know, of course you're going to do
it. I mean, I'm a believer. It's like, if by turn 4 I have any command points left, I've probably screwed up somewhere.
Messed up somewhere. Yeah, that's fair. With knights, though,
that's how I feel about turn 2. Maybe I'm doing this
wrong. That's
oh, dude, if I have the opportunity to burn them all in turn by turn two, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, you know, I could with my army, I could burn them all before the game starts. So, I'll be throwing out heirlooms and making them characters left and right. I do want to say, though, hands down, my favorite stratagem, one command point stratagem in this book is Iron Hell Heavy Stubbers. So,
because that lets every knight in that detachment, right?
Minus one.
Neg one AP, right?
Right. So,
every single night. It's all night. It's not you burn it for one. It's all of it.
In that detachment. Every night in that detachment. So paladins love it. So, you know, if you're running a lot of paladins and you're not using Iron Rail Heavy Stubbers, shame on you. That is a fantastic stratagem to make right there. Just one paladin that turns six shots into AP neg one. If you're running three paladins in a detachment, that's 18 shots that go from strength four nothing to strength four neg one. That's huge for one command.
Neg one. I mean, that's almost 17% more effective. I mean,
yeah, math checks out. Sure. It's great. It's fantastic.
37% more effective. Yeah,
that's my detachments, the way they're set up. The one I use it on is for my Helverins with my Paladin. I've got a Paladin and two Helverins. So your Helverins benefit from it as well. Almost every knight out there has a stubber on it. So use that stratagem.
That's so weird. The stubbers are on the knights. That's what I've always thought was weird. It worked out really awesome in 7th where you had to shoot something to be able to charge it.
I don't know how badly I wanted a Lancer and the Acheron to have something, just a heavy stubber.
Oh, well, the Acheron had it, or the Acheron had it, as of the Lancer.
The Acheron had the Flamer and, the Bolter?
Mm-hmm.
Did it
twin Heavy Bolter is what it was, I think.
The Castigator had the... Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's got the Twin Heavy Bolter things in the Chainsword. So that one was good. It was the...
It's the Lancer that suffered.
The Lancer and the Castigator. Those are the two that suffered. So...
Because the Lancer had a pretty cool gun that you can shoot. It's the Lance actually shot some decent shots back then.
Yeah. But now, the Lancer now is... I'm just going to say it. Forge World, it's overpriced. Your Cerastus Knights are pointed too high. Bring them down a little. Please. However, I still play it in my list because it looks amazing. And it does look amazing.
Well, yours looks even awesome. More awesomer. That's not a word, I don't think, but...
I'm just going to let that slide.
Super, super coolly awesomer because yours is like jumping off like a rock coming down to stab someone.
Just don't give the Lancer the fire after treatment.
But the Lancer, well, not just the Lancer, any Cerastus knight. Now, we had locally FAQ'd that to allow them to use stratagems, but now Forge World has ruled that Cerastus pattern knights can use the stratagems that like a Questorus knight can use. They can use those. And the great thing about that is when they advance 2d6. So a Lancer...
First turn charge, baby.
Yeah. Moves 14 inches, and if you give it the Landstrider Warlord trait, you're moving 14-inch move with 2d6 plus 2 advance, and then you're charging 2d6 plus 2. So guess who gets my rotate ion shields every turn because everybody's guns. Right?
Well, the Lancer, and then this last point we'll make before we break... knights don't get an invulnerable save in close combat. The Lancer does.
The Lancer does, and then your, I cannot remember the names of them off the top of my head, but the two Mechanicus knights.
Oh, the one also from Forge World, right?
Yeah. They are super pricey as well. However, I'm not advocating throwing them in your list. However, if you do and you love them, please message me and give me an excuse to buy them because they're the two knights that I don't have.
Well, they look cool.
They look amazing, right?
You should just get the Carapace from Forge World and then make it another knight because it's the Carapace that sells it.
That's really it. But the
Megara, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
The Megara and the there's the other one. There's two of them. But they so the Lancer has a 5-up and shooting, 4-up in close combat. Those two knights have a 4-up to shooting and a 5-up in close combat. So there is a lot of value in that they are going to be able to get into combat and still protect themselves.
All right, man. Well, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. Actually, when we come back, it'll be me and Dave Taylor talking about the Charitable Foundation. And then after that, we'll come back with the guys here.
Sounds good.
See y'all in a minute.
You're listening to Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a very special segment of Forged Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy. I'm joined tonight by Dave Taylor.
Hey, how's it going, Paul?
Dave, amazing painter. You can't say enough good stuff about your work. I'm sure people are familiar with you. If they haven't heard you before, they've seen your work. I know it.
I there's a lot of it out there. So people have probably stumbled across it, I guess.
Well, you've just been a long time. You've been a fixture in this community and in the hobby for a long time. Games Workshop for a while. Your armies have been in White Dwarf. You feature your own blog. You've run some charity raffles for armies and stuff before. I mean, it's just, I'm sure people are familiar.
Cool.
But if not, we're going to help them get familiar, at least with your current project.
Indeed. So, yeah, definitely. Now, I wanted to come on and have a quick chat about the Nova Open Charitable Foundation. As you mentioned, I've been doing this for a little while. The short story is Nova Open Charitable Foundation is a charity. Each year we run raffles for armies, for units, for single miniatures. All these armies, units, and single miniatures have been painted by artists around the world and donated to the Nova Open Charitable Foundation. We raffle them off, and the money goes to one of three charities, either Doctors Without Borders, Breast Cancer Research Foundation, and the Fisher House Foundation.
They can find all this information at the NovaFoundation.org. That's N-O-V-A, open, I'm sorry, NovaOpenFoundation.org.
Yeah.
And this is part of what the Nova Open is all about, being a charitable organization.
Yeah. So the Nova Open Charitable Foundation is a separate organization in that the money is completely separate and the organization, the people who are sort of organizing it completely separate. However, we were born out of the Nova Open event, sort of a whole bunch of people sitting around saying, hey, wouldn't it be cool if? The Nova Open convention was kind enough to say, yeah, sure, you can use our name.
That's really great. And people can see the current raffles on the website. And there you can see it. There's armies, detachments, models, and then just donations that people can put if they don't see anything that they particularly want, but they still want to contribute, they can contribute directly to the foundation.
Yeah, if they can't find anything in the 22 raffles that we have running at the moment, they can certainly do that.
One of the models is a Warlord Titan.
Yeah, yep. We're really excited about that. Basically, John Steining is a guy who's been painting with us doing charity painting, certainly with me, for the last 8 or 9 years. And last year, he wandered around the Forge World booth at Nova Open. Got excited about the idea of painting up a Warlord Titan. And about a month or two ago, he said, hey, Dave, here's a whole bunch of pictures of the Warlord Titan that I've painted and I'd like to donate. So that's absolutely huge, awesome sort of thing that John's done, which is really cool. We're very excited.
Amazing. Yeah, but you've got some other large models on there too, like a Mortarion that I'm eyeing right now.
Yep. Mortarion there is painted by Duncan Rhodes of the Two Thin Coats. that particular model, if you were to go to Warhammer TV and look at the How to Paint Mortarion, that's the model. So Duncan donated that to us. This is his third year donating a model. So we're excited to have that one.
So the models themselves, they each have a raffle ticket price. Some of them are a little bit more expensive than others, but they're all just a couple of bucks. Like, even if you wanted to, let's say you had a couple of dollars burning a hole in your pocket, you could come and get a raffle ticket and have odds on pulling away a beautiful model.
Exactly. One of the things that that I will mention there is we have a $10 minimum on our PayPal checkout, and that's because on purchases less than $10, the PayPal fees really start to eat into it. One of the things we tried that we've done every year, and we sort of continue to pledge to do, is that 95 cents from every dollar that is spent on the raffles goes to those charities. So 3 cents from every dollar goes to pay for the PayPal fees, and 2 cents from every dollar goes towards shipping.
Well, what that $10 minimum purchase would get you is a raffle ticket for the Warlord Titan and a raffle ticket for Armaterion, painted by Duncan Rhodes.
Yeah. There's or if you wanted to, you could get five tickets for the Chapter of Hope Ultramarines Army, which is a Primaris Marine Army. It's about 4,000 points worth. Wow. It's got over 100 models. It's all the new Primaris stuff. There's the, I think it's the Aris, I can never say it correctly. Aristeus, the big super heavy.
Primaris. I know what you're talking about, yes.
Yeah, it's got all the guns.
Play find the Stormbolter on it. Do you know where the Stormbolter is?
No, I don't.
It's in the back. It has a Stormbolter, like coming out of the back of it.
All right, like protecting one of the rear hatches or something?
I guess.
Yeah, I'll have to go looking for that. That's cool.
If I remember right, I think it does. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. One thing I'll mention is, I'll toot my own horn as well, is myself and a friend of mine in the UK, Drew Palliers, we sort of did a collaboration thing where I painted up a Death Guard Lord of Contagion, and he painted up a Primaris Lieutenant, Blood Angels, and both of those models are sort of presented together.
I see the Tainted Blood diorama that you have there.
That's the one, yep.
Yep. And this, it's not just 40K models, there's also a couple of Legion things. There's a prop replica of a bolt pistol. I mean, this is something to check out. So go to the NovaOpenFoundation.org, and you will, across the top, you'll see the headings for the armies, detachment models to check out. And this is, you know, if you feel like basically having a random shot at getting one of these or donating to one of these great causes, then this is the time to do it. How much money have you raised over the several years?
Over the years we've been doing it, it's over, I think we're probably around 140,000, 150,000. Mark, we did, we wrote checks for $53,000 last year to go to those three charities, Doctors Without Borders, Breast Cancer Research Foundation, and the Fisher House Foundation. This year, our goal is 60, but really it'd be awesome if we can bump that up around 75.
And the people that are contributing to this, these are folks that have, they've donated this stuff. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's a mix of things. Some people have donated models from their own collections, or they went and bought the model and painted it up and donated it. Some of the other ones, like the Hordes Force, for example, the Trollkin army, was donated by, the models for that were donated by Privateer Press.
Okay.
For the Chapter of Hope, the Death Watch and the Ultramarines, those two armies, they were donated by a pretty broad sort of group of people. So Chapter of Hope is a sort of a name that Alexander Good sort of put together to gather support and paint up a whole bunch of minis to sort of send our way.
These are people that have like come together in the spirit of giving, as it were.
Oh yeah,
to make this happen, to put up quality things that people actually would want to have a shot at getting.
Exactly.
And for these causes.
Yeah, Fantasy Flight have provided the Star Wars Legion stuff and the Star Wars X-wing models. So we've got a repaint going on of those at the moment. So yeah, lots of companies have supported us and provided some great minis, really, to get.
Yeah, that's good. Well, I mean, it's stuff. I mean, again, it shows people, you know, all coming together for what is a good cause. And I think that's something that anytime you kind of see that in the world, you know, again, it makes you feel good.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think there's a lot of wargamers out there that are doing great things, be it for global charities or for local charities. There's Food Hammer, Food Machine, Poppy's Angels in the UK. It's really great to see all these organizations doing some good stuff.
Yeah, I can't compete with these painters here, but it makes me want to get in on the action of a model or two for these causes.
There's loads of ways that you can do it. I think we probably, next year we'll probably have a Necron army, I think, because we had we certainly had a Necron army inbox, new inbox kind of thing donated. But yeah, there's lots of different ways to get involved. You can, obviously buying a ticket is great, sharing and telling people all about it is extra great. And yeah, if you want to get involved in painting for next year, if anybody out there wants to do that, they can probably shoot me an email at tanithtaylor@gmail.com. So Tanith Taylor is all one word. But yeah, that'll be absolutely awesome.
That is great. So the stuff here, this is locked in for this year.
Yeah. So this is for our summer raffles. The tickets are on sale now. Ticket sales end at noon Eastern summertime for the US on September 2nd, which is the last day of the Nova Open event. We'll then go through and randomize and draw the raffles, find out the winners. We'll announce them that evening at the award ceremony. and start shipping out the week after.
And people can contribute and purchase these tickets from anywhere in the world, and you will ship them if they win, no matter where they are in the world.
Exactly. Yeah, we definitely will. Basically, purchases are done through PayPal. So if you've got a PayPal account, it'll be nice and easy. If you don't, you can still use a credit card through the PayPal system. And yeah, we've shipped to Tasmania. We've shipped to Western Australia. We've shipped to Japan, to the UK a bunch of times. I think we've shipped a couple of times to mainland Europe, and of course all across the US as well.
So, and this has been going, like we mentioned, for years, and so you're well practiced in getting these things packaged up and sent to where they need to go.
Yeah, definitely. We've had all of the armies will be shipped in KR multi-case cases, so that's all part of that, which is definitely cool. The Warlord Titan is going to be the fun one for this year.
Strap it in a car seat, put the car seat back in its box.
That's actually one of the things. What John and John Steining, who painted and donated it, and I sort of did when we talked about it, was how about that if it's within a 7 or 8 hour drive, if the winner lives within 7 or 8 hours of DC, we'll actually do that. We'll strap it in a car seat, we'll drive it to their local gaming store. I'll drag along my Warlord Titan, and we can have a huge battle at the local store, and then they get to take it home with them.
That would be fun. That'd be real fun.
So we're pretty excited about that as well.
Yeah. So again, I just want to make it clear that people, no matter where they are, where they're hearing this right now, they are able to get some of the tickets.
Yeah.
And they will can feel confident that if they win, they're going to get what they picked up.
Absolutely. Yeah.
When they're choosing to buy their ticket, do they get to choose what cause it goes to? How is
that all works? The artists who are involved, they're the ones who get to choose which.
Oh, that's fair.
Where it goes to. So, for example, Wes Cogdall, who runs Stiffneck Studios, Wes has been painting with us for the last 5 years. He was the one who brought the Fisher House Foundation to our attention. So, everything that Wes submits, all the money raised by that goes to the Fisher House Foundation.
Oh, that's great. So, there's a couple things that people can find here. They can either find models that really appeal to them, or yep. they can buy tickets for the causes that are most near and dear to them.
Exactly. Yeah.
I like and still I have the possibility of coming away with a sweet model. Exactly. Or army or whatever. I mean there's right. Yeah. I mean, or sometimes it's a model and an army in the case of the Titan or Mortarion. Yes.
Pretty much.
Oh man, I mean I like that. And this is even if you're people should still go and browse the photos on the site.
Yes, very definitely.
We're not going to do them justice about talking. I know we've talked about some named painters and some really cool what we know is really cool models, but you're going to like seeing some of these things and seeing the effort that people have put into this. It's kind of humbling. You know, these folks know this is not going to live on their shelf. This is going to go somewhere else, and the proceeds from it are going to benefit great causes.
Yeah, it is definitely humbling. It's to see the amount of time and effort that people have put in is fantastic.
Yeah, sure. Man, I love it. So this is some they can buy tickets up until September 2nd. Is that what you said?
That's
and
correct.
And then the winners will be drawn or announced.
Both. They'll be drawn on the afternoon of September 2nd and announced that evening. Another sort of great place to keep an eye on what we've got coming up and whether you're a winner or not, that sort of thing, is on our Facebook page, which is Nova Open Charitable Foundation. To find that, like that, make sure you follow it, and you'll get there'll be updates there as well.
Will you also email the winners if they?
Oh yeah, yeah, okay. Very depth.
So you have lots of ways to communicate with the people that could potentially win.
Yeah, for sure, definitely. And one thing I'll mention as well, just if you don't see anything you like and you make a donation, that's fantastic. But coming up in October, November time, we'll have our second set of fall raffles. We did a set of fall raffles in November last year that went well. We've got already we've had people start donating models and armies and that kind of thing for October, November.
That's awesome. When do you expect those to go up on the site? I mean, after this one, after after this closes, of course. But
yeah, last year we did it so that they were drawn on Black Friday, so the Friday after, so was it the fourth Friday of the month of November? So we started a little bit before Halloween. So this year we'll probably start a little bit earlier in October, I think, and run to sort of mid-November.
Yeah, I dig it. Yep. Well, Dave, what's next for you? Like, where I know you hit the cons and you travel a bit. You had a you have a book.
Yeah, I got a book that I'm working on. Yeah, the Kickstarter for that went very well, and work continues apace on that. I'm probably about halfway through the book, and I'm due to send it off to the printers in September. So,
what's the name of this so people can find it?
Oh, Armies and Legions and Hordes. So if you were to do a quick search for
Armies, Legions and Hordes, Dave Taylor put that in there.
Yeah, Dave Taylor Miniatures or Backer Kit. Actually, it's available. I've got a late pledge manager open at the moment. So there's a pre-order store as part of that. So if you did miss the Kickstarter, come on and check that out. The book itself is about all of my thoughts on ways to help you finish armies, ways that I finish my armies, or things that...
Is there crying involved?
Is there crying involved? Sometimes. Sometimes there is crying involved. No, not a lot of weeping.
Oh, you should come around here.
All right, okay. Well, hopefully I can, the book is going to be able to help you sort of alleviate that kind of feeling.
That's awesome, man. Dave, thanks a lot for taking the time with me tonight and explaining, you know, ways that people can get in on this stuff. I mean, this is, I love seeing this stuff. I try to contribute when and where I can, either whether it's doing something like a model or just talking about it or contributing, buying tickets. You know, this is part of what helps make the world go around.
And having us on the show is another way of contributing. It's great. Yeah. So if everybody who's listening can get out there and share it, we'd love to reach a lot more people this year, and this is definitely helping us do it. I appreciate that. Thank you.
I'd like to follow back up with you later this year to see how things went, see what the next set of stuff is, and I look forward to talking to you.
Yeah, definitely. That'd be great.
Have a good night.
Cool. Thanks, man.
Forged Narrative is brought to you by Dicehead.com. www.dicehead.com. Games, hob supplies, and comics. They have it all.
Hey, everybody, we are back. I still got Ricky, Chris, and Troop.
I feel like you have forgot Troop's name there for just a second.
It's a night to remember, guys.
I'm okay with it.
We have a series of rules here, and one of the rules is that people say what's up or hey in the order that I say their name. And so I normally only do it two at a time. I did it three this time.
It threw the whole rhythm.
His own rule.
Yeah, it threw the rhythm off. Oh my gosh, like it was bad.
Leave
this in the show. I want the world to hear it.
Well, for listener insight, I sit here anxiously waiting to find out what order I come in.
It is like Paul knows. Nobody else knows. So you're just
I know. I just know that every time we have somebody new on the show and he does that, like it's always going to take at least two tries.
We're doing it live.
That's it. So I hope you guys enjoyed the segment with Dave. Dave is always cool to talk with. Dave and I have known each other for years. He actually ran the Games Workshop Grand Tournaments for a period of time. And we did not always see eye to eye, but that's the benefit of age and wisdom, is that now we have become friends.
Yeah, well, the work that he's doing for Nova and the, you know, the raffles and the charity foundation stuff and all that extra work, it's awesome, man. I know I always try to support those things as much as I can every year in hopes that I win one of those sweet models.
There's some very cool stuff up on the site this year. It's worth checking out. Even if you aren't in a position to get a couple tickets, maybe you share it and maybe somebody else gets a couple tickets. I mean, that's probably the best thing to do.
I'm never more excited to give to charity than to buy those tickets.
Yeah, it's good causes and quality models. It always kind of sneaks up on me, but I really want to contribute in some way, whether it either be a model. Look, no one's going to buy my models. I want to put something up there on one of their auctions that they have, one of their raffles that they have. So maybe we'll get there.
A slightly used Forge the Narrative t-shirt.
my hobby progress this week. I told you I painted that Crimson Hunter Exarch, but I also got some Spite Revenants and the terrain dice for Age of Sigmar.
Listen to me. If you don't own the terrain dice, buy the terrain dice. I don't care any other dice for Sigmar. If you don't buy those, okay, fine. Those terrain dice will take so much time off of the setup of your game. They are super convenient. I'm very happy with those.
Yeah, I got them, and I got it's the old Dreicha model, but it's the Branch Witch.
Dreicha?
Yeah, I know what you just did there.
No, cut this out.
I just want to point out, I wanted to clarify, is that what you were talking about? Paul's pronunciation this time. It was not me. It was Ricky.
No, I wasn't trying to be facetious. I wanted to make sure we were talking about Dreicha because I wasn't sure where we were going. I'm sorry.
Look, this is staying in. I'm saying is I got the model because, look, the Dryads, if you have the Dryad kit and you have a tree spirit kit or, you know, the Spy Revenant or whatever kit, you have that, you can make your own Branch Witches. But
yeah.
I also decided to get the fine cast Dreicha. It's Dreicha, by the way. Model. So I got that, the dice, the command dice, and the last set of Spite Revenants that I need to complete my Dreadwood Wardrobe. That's my actual hobby progress today.
this week. Well, I mean, my hobby progress has not been great. When you're packing, it's very hard to, you know, start new paint projects or whatever. But I did find some very, very old, like some of my very first 40K stuff, including for a throwback Thursday, a photo of like my first battle with the third edition box set. My hobby has come a long way. We'll put it that way.
I bet. Man, I'm telling you, I loved that third edition box set when I mixed in like some of the arms and stuff from the second edition stuff. Like one of my favorite miniatures was a beaky helmet dude with the second edition arm with the fist like raised up and his bolter pushed off to the side.
Yeah, didn't they make like a commemorative redo model of that guy at some point?
Well, he's like I wasn't captain, trying to replicate right? a dude. Oh no, they did. They actually did. You're talking about the second edition box set art.
Oh, yes, okay, okay.
That was a Games Day miniature that they did reproduce.
Okay, no, I think I remember what you're talking about.
He did not have a helmet, though. He had white hair and like flames on his knee and that kind of stuff.
I got a question. What is the beaky helmet for?
That's a Mark VI helmet.
Well, okay, yeah. I always said that's a Mark VI helmet. That was the original helmet style for the original Space Marines.
Yep.
Okay, like so, that was just an aesthetic design. Like there was no like purpose.
No, yes, there wasn't.
Okay,
it was supposed to be like some kind of extra filtration mask or something. That's how they explained it later. But yeah,
I don't care. I love them. That having when you get a beak marine like a head, you always try to do something special with it. Like anytime I get them, like they become like my sergeant or they become something. There's anytime I get the beaks, I love them and I love throwing those in there in my army. So I don't
that's
know
what I did as a kid. Like right? my first painted sergeant had the beaky helmet. I was like, this is awesome.
Y'all are better than me because I just throw them away.
I will kill you.
It's a bit of a throwback. Like for me, like I know, I'm gonna put the beaky helmet on this guy because there's only one on a sprue.
Yeah.
Especially you know with this third edition release, and I'm gonna put the second edition fist arm on there, and he's gonna have his bolter on there. This guy was he was just a TAC marine, but in my mind, he was the last TAC marine to ever die in a squad.
No, I'm all about that. I think that's awesome. It nostalgia is a funny thing. Just going through all of the old stuff and looking at kind of the benchmarks you've done, it really not just like the benchmarks on a personal level, but from just the hobby in general, right? Where we are today in 40K versus where we were when I got started. Yeah, it all these different things to distract you when you should be packing.
Well, whatever. It's fun. It's fun to look at your hobby progress too. I think to where you do see like I painted this squad or model 100 years ago. Like I'm actually recently I'm painting some miniatures for Ricky to use the ATC, some mortars. And I was telling my wife about this. It's that the, not that she cares, by the way, but, or she does care, but let's say not that she's like overly.
She does, yeah, she does what everybody's wife does. That's nice, dear.
That's no, nice, dear. Yeah, that's
she lets me, like, she's very supportive. What I'm saying is I'm telling her like the basing scheme of this army is 10 years ago. Like I don't base miniatures the same way anymore. Like anywhere close. So going back and having to base these mortar squads and stuff for the IG army, I have to kind of like to turn back the clock a bit to replicate what I did a decade ago.
Yeah, I've run into that too. Like going back to do something like for my knights, I'm sitting here racking my brain trying to remember exactly how I did the basing for my knights, because we've come so far past that in just the few years since Imperial Knights come out.
From, like, what I was doing.
All the technical paints, like you're throwing tufts on there, tech paint, and all these bits and stuff that you can get now, and it's made so much easier and quicker now. And you know, while I think you sacrifice a little in overall what you can do by using some of these off the shelf products, that for most models, that stuff is amazing to use, because it lets you spend more time somewhere else.
Dude, every time I run out of Lustria Undergrowth, I go to the hobby store and buy every pot that they have.
They should sell it by the gallon or something.
Well, that's one of the ones they have not made in the
world. If they did, it would be a gallon with like the base smaller than the top of the lid.
Yeah, it would definitely be made to fall over.
I mean, this thing, with the Lustria Undergrowth. But yeah, that's it. I have to get as much as I possibly can.
I think that's an excellent idea. I'm just gonna say it.
Just buy it all.
Well, I guess back to the original point is that turning back the clock to replicate certain things. I've actually started to make notes on recipes of things.
Oh yeah, yeah. That is the best thing you can do. I keep a document. If my computer ever crashes, my Titan is completely screwed, because I have a document that has everything on my Titan, every trim, the red paint. Panels, the superstructure, the white panels. I've got every step and every color, so that over the course of this whole project, as I get time to work on it, I don't forget and use the wrong color on one leg and a different color on the other leg. You know, do something stupid like that. Absolutely. Keep a journal. keep a painting journal.
What we're saying is, I mean, like, I keep mine on my phone or whatever as well.
Yeah.
Like in the notes section on my phone, because I found myself like, for Eldar, for instance, for my new Eldar color scheme, I've been painting all these planes and trying to match my wave serpents and whatever, is that I'm not using the exact color scheme of the recipe in the Games Workshop paint app. I have a highlight color that is different. So 3 months from now, when I go back to try to replicate it, I might forget the top color green.
Yeah, and it doesn't help you, because 47 years ago when you started playing, like, half those colors don't exist anymore.
You're not right. I'm trying to replicate emerald green with a highlight. That's all I'm trying to replicate.
I'm having flashbacks from Adepticon a few years ago.
That's all I'm trying to replicate is emerald green with a freaking highlight. Right? Come on. How hard should it be? But it's really difficult, because those greens don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Paul, I remember you sending me like 15,000 pictures, like, just try to match this color the best you can. And then I would in turn send a picture back and it would just reply, not even close.
Then I would berate you for an hour and a half. You did, yeah. But hey, look, you did all right. We did all right that year.
Hey, those were the greatest painted 2 hours prior to us rolling dice models I've ever seen in my life.
Except for you that year.
I was a little drunk. that time.
Hey, look, you brought me beer, so that was awesome. So, you know, whatever.
So can we just call that call it a draw.
I do. That was fine.
Yeah. Stop yelling at me. Here's a beer. Shut up.
I'm over here like, oh man, I gotta use this soda.
and then I walked away with like,
oh, you would roll up like one of those stout Long Islands. I'd be like, yep, troop, we're good.
Yeah. I specifically remember the I'm completely ashamed of you moment, and that's when I shot a missile at like a plasma obliterator, and then you were like, that Titan's got one wound left, let's do this missile. I already shot it. That was it. Me and Paul were not friends anymore at that point.
No, I was hoping that you would be struck by lightning. That's what I was hoping.
Yeah. I've seen that look like twice in my life. Once was like when my parents told me they were disappointed, and then Paul.
There's nothing I can say about that that's actually very accurate.
So, the Long Islands were good.
Anyone hear like taps in the background?
I was able to get over it pretty quickly. But let's talk about hobby segment for a moment. I mentioned in the first part of the show that the new White Dwarf, the most recent White Dwarf, has a really cool spot in there to where they are highlighting the new Night Haunt figures for Sigmar. Now, I'm not going to make this specifically about Sigmar, but they use colors in that make the figure actually feel like they're come alive, stay bright. And the way that they accomplish that is using a color that you would not necessarily expect. Like in this instance, you can see on there, and there are tutorials, like with Duncan and Chris Peach doing them on YouTube. But in the White Dwarf, they also do a similar thing to where they use a color that is different than you might expect for highlighting things like green. So in this color, in this case, they use a gray color to highlight it, and that help keeps it alive. And for instance, for an orange color, or Chris backed me up on this with highlighting like a red color, sometimes you go up to a bone or a tan color highlight a red or an orange, because it makes it gives it that kind of electric, almost bright light feel.
Mm-hmm. And there's definitely a real art to doing something like that, and not just making it look like you're very poorly dry brushing a random color that doesn't belong there, trying to make it look dirty or whatever. You do have to think about it a little bit, but no, browns and reds are really strong complementary colors, you know, to the eye, and when you're creating transitions and things. And that's one of the reasons my bases are brown. It's because I like the way that the reds and the browns play off each other.
But when you're doing a highlight, say, on an orange, so you go from Mephiston red to Wild Rider red to, Fire Slayer orange?
Well, you would go like Mephiston red to Evil Sun Scarlet to Wild Rider red, and then you could go, up into the oranges like Fire Dragon Bright or Troll Slayer orange or something like that.
One step beyond to make it look like electric, then you don't go with another orange, you go with a Eustopti bone.
Yep, you go with the bone, you don't go with a yellow.
You go with a color that you would not necessarily suspect, because you're wanting it. It gives you a different feel. If you went with yellow, or you went with even a brighter orange or whatever, you're going to get a different feel than if you went with one of these other colors that you might not suspect that you go with.
Right, with the yellow, you're staying in that kind of a hot spectrum, right? The model's going to feel warmer visually, which I know you don't feel with your eyes, and if you are, then you should probably stop, because that's going to ruin your vision. But what I'm trying to say is, by bringing it into the brown or the tan, you're still keeping the essence of what that red is, but you're grounding it a bit more. It's not flashy.
I think it lets you absorb the whole experience of the transition a little bit in a different way, that it makes it feel brighter and more alive.
Well, you got to think back to like some Necron and some of the old Jakari paint schemes, a few years back, where it was like a black base with that hyper
green. It goes from black to electric blue.
Yeah, but then now the whole model looks blue. Like, there's a blue hue to the entire model, even though it's literally a straight line in black.
Yep.
So those color choices are really how we see them, because it's a zoomed out look, play tricks with your eyes, and that's why you're getting these cool effects, like you're saying, by switching out of the spectrum into these other cooler colors.
That's what I want the segment to be about, and this is really showed in the White Dwarf, and you can see it. I mean, not that other there are a lot of tutorials out there, but they really show it. It's like they're using a color that maybe you would not intuitively go to, because it's not in that trend. It's not in that color family, that transition family. Like when it's easy to go to the paint rack and say, okay, I'm going to take these three greens and come home and that's what's going to be my base, my initial highlight and my edge highlight. But when you throw in this, like for instance, if you go with a gray, a really, really light gray with the green, or a really like the bone color with the reds, even, you're going to get a much more alive, bright, and vibrant feel than even if you went up to the yellows or the mood greens or whatever in the green family.
Yeah, and I would just say, again, it's not something to be very heavy-handed with. It is the lightest kind of accent to top off the work that you've already done. Otherwise, it could end up being disruptive to those colors, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there is some technique in applying this. I think you're spot on with that. But even making the transition mentally to apply those colors, I think, is something that not everyone does.
Yeah, I think for the longest time we've been so, I don't want to use like the term brainwashed, but maybe programmed to like these triad concepts, you know, like boom, 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 done kind of deal. So this extra outside the box thinking really sets painting apart from a lot of what I would consider maybe just a standard paint job at this point. Well, like, I hate to be like using that word.
You're right. If I can give like an example of what I've done in the past, like all my chaos demons have a Nurgle slant to them. So even my horrors, they're not pink horrors, they're green horrors. And my color transition on the horrors, like highlighting them the same way that I do the Nurgle demons, makes the horrors look almost subdued in their color scheme. They get nowhere near that vibrant color, that magical, that ethereal color that that they have when you're going with the pinks and that kind of stuff. So if I went with something else as the top coat other than moot green, I think it's going to give them that little bit of spectral, that little bit of ethereal quality that I'm looking for that I don't get from following just three shades of green.
Greed. It's all about tricking your eyes, man.
I mean, that's it. It is. I think you said that right, Troop. It's tricking the eyes. And you can do that with, and it's not an off color, because it really is, because the base composites of the color, I think, is really what we're doing, even though we're not, like, we are not savvy enough to put it all together. But that's really what we're doing, is the base components of that color, what we're playing off of, and using it in a way that gives us the effect that we want. Do you guys agree?
I would say so.
That's one of the big things in the White Dwarf this month, is that it goes, it does the Night Haunts, but I think you can apply the Night Haunt concept to almost anything that you're doing, whether that be, you want to give the impression of like a bright white hot plasma gun.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that the Night Haunt paint tutorials have been one of the things I've been looking forward to the most, because the sort of ethereal effects that we can put on things, and the different colors you can do that with. I mean, a lot of times you see like the blues and the teals, and I understand why that the associations are so ingrained to us as to, you know, to use those kinds of colors. But those techniques can be applied to so many different colors to create all these different kinds of effects and things.
Well, we talk about all the time in the segment about how to like make a sergeant or whatever stand out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
this is definitely one of those like next step things.
Yeah, agreed.
Speaking of like the Night Haunt and some of the looks and stuff, have you had a chance to try the new technical paint for them?
I have them, but I have not tried it yet. I plan to try them on some Necrons.
Oh yeah, dude, they're super awesome. I got to help out a little bit and try them out basically, but I was helping paint up a couple models for a store. It's smooth. Like, it's up there with Typhus Corrosion for me as far as like the best technical paints.
That's good. I love that talent in a bottle stuff. I mean, when you can really do shortcuts.
My son plays Night Haunt, so anything that lets me get models painted faster and easier, and I'm not spending all my hobby time for his army, I'm pumped.
Nice. Well, guys, that's all I really wanted to cover today. I mean, I know we've kind of jumped around from how to make knights work to the Nova Open Charitable Foundation to some how to make your models look electric. You know, we covered a wide range of spectrum, including us going to be at this tournament this coming up weekend. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about before we get out of here?
Yeah, I just want you all to know that the Gannet will dive from 100 feet in the air into the ocean, hitting at 62 miles an hour to eat a fish.
That's a bird, right?
It is. It's amazing. Look it up on YouTube. It will blow your mind.
Wow. I do have one thing. This is going to be my last show as a regular panelist. I have real life kind of came in. When presented with opportunities to be on the show again, I will 100% jump on that to be able to, you know, still reach out, talk to the guys, still love all these guys. And I just wanted to thank everybody for the last few years, you know, as a regular panelist and stuff, to the listeners, you know, everybody on the show now, past, present, future. I just wanted to thank you guys, man. It's been a heck of a ride and been super fun. And looking forward to the next time I have the ability to be on the show again.
True, you're going to be working nights. So that's when we normally record, but we'll try to get some segments in with you.
Yes, yeah. Sir.
Do you have an office there that, man, like, could you just shut the door in your office and, like, you know, do it while nobody's paying attention?
I don't want to call a conference call for the next 2 hours.
Yeah.
I don't want to call out my work like that, but our Wi-Fi is kind of janky.
Hey, if I recorded from Fort Pickett on that Wi-Fi, I think you can make it happen.
You sounded terrible.
I know, it was embarrassing.
Well, Troop and I started pretty much on FDN right at the same time, so it makes me a little sad, but anytime you can be on, brother, great to have you.
Always a welcome space. Well, guys, thank y'all for joining me tonight. This is not the last you're going to hear Troop, people, for real.
No, I'll be on, just not regularly.
Hope you all have a good rest of y'all's night. We'll talk to y'all next week.
Yeah, good luck at ATC, guys.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
It's all in the reflexes.